Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Morgan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Morgan.
Hello, everybody. Just some housekeeping. We will be recording and publishing the audio only portion of this meeting. You can sign up for email or listen to previously recorded meetings on our website at simpleactions.net. Those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. It's like a women's restroom right there, men's rooms right there through that doorway. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Anyone on Zoom can raise their hand and somebody will chat with you in Zoom. At this time, please silence your cell phones. We also respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that the book Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism based on simple actions. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we are discussing step three. Please welcome our panel this evening. We've got Dave and Adita. I will read the first paragraph, which will be on page 60, and then the panel will share each for a few minutes each on the reading. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood him. The first reading, our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after made clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. So I don't know if you don't want to go. Yeah.
All right.
Go this way if you want.
My name's Adita. I'm an alcoholic. I have spoken here before, and I always feel ill-prepared as I look over and he's got notes and it printed out. So that's all right. It'll be all right. I have a home group, and it is Larchmont 12 and 12. We meet actually Monday nights at 8 p.m., and it's right off of Jamestown Crescent. It's a step study where we use both the big book and the 12 and 12, and we alternate every week which book we're in. And I was going to say the first Monday of every month we actually do the tradition, and I was going to thank you all for giving me an excuse not to be at my group tonight because it's a tradition. But then Cherie's here, and I know she's going to head over there right after as well, so I can't use that. In any case, we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. It's taken me a long time to realize that my life's not mine to manage anyway. And the more I tried to manage it, the more chaotic it got. The more I had my hands on the wheel, the further lost I got from where I was supposed to be going, as if I had any clue. It's funny because when I must have read this, I have a check next to that one, but not B and C. Like, that part was obvious to me when I first like went through this. And as we go down, that no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. No, I think about that as far as like the my folks, siblings, girlfriends, employers, you know, getting kicked out of college the first time, like, I mean, all sorts of stuff. It didn't matter what people had to say. There was no, you know, being arrested, like spending the night in jail. These things had zero consequence. No worldly thing was going to influence or change my alcoholism. That was on a path all on its own. And then see that God could and would if he were sought. That sentence there, I had no idea what God is. I have no clue what God is today. I have a relationship with a higher power in my life. But the important segment of that, which was pointed out to me very early on, was sought. That I didn't have to know God, that I didn't have to understand God, that if I were simply seeking, that was enough in my life.
That's that. All
right. Yeah.
Thanks, Adita.
Yeah.
Thanks, Morgan. Thanks, everybody, for having me here. I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic. Dave. Thanks for asking me, Amy. And thanks to everybody in Zoom land for being here. And I always love coming here. I do take notes before I get here. I'm not a great off-the-cuff speaker because I get a little nervous still. My sobriety date's July 14th, 2002. I'm a member of the New Day Group in Virginia Beach. And I have a service position, sponsor men, have a sponsor, and love AA. So I came to AA, as many of you know, from being here before, through a treatment center. I did three months inpatient. I was pretty sick, and I needed all the help I could get. And while I was there, I met a man, my first sponsor, John, and you know, he helped me so much in that early stages. I guess he had a lot of experience helping people in those first few steps. And we did one, two, and three while I was in there in those three. Well, I can't say I finished three, as you'll hear more about that. But he taught me a lot about three, I'll say that. I had trouble with, you know, the God concept, because I'd gone to church as a kid, and seemed like when we got home, all that was out the window, you know, and my mother was the higher power, and you did what she said. And if you didn't, you paid the price. So anyway, plus, you know, they were telling me things not to do, and I didn't like that, you know. So I learned how, you know, my mother had a lot of rules. I didn't like that. I just learned how to get away with stuff, you know, instead of what the right thing to do was. And so anyway, he helped me. He said, well, just replace God with AA in steps one and two and three, actually two and three, you know. Came to believe that AA could restore me to sanity and turn my will and my life over to the care of AA. And that helped me a lot. But I think I still, when I got, after my 3 months there, I continued to work with him over the phone. He was in Williamsburg, and until the point where I was having some not so sober thinking, and he told me not to call him again until I got a sponsor in Virginia Beach. Mm-hmm. And he was right. But I used that to kind of, and I love this phrase, I think it's in We Agnostics, I neatly evaded the subject of God or whatever it is, something like that. Because I kind of worked that space in between leaving there and getting the new sponsor to not do my fourth step. And they say that, you know, you've done your third step and you start your fourth step. And so anyway, I think I'll leave it at that for now and we'll move on.
Awesome. Thank you both. All right. The second reading is also going to be on page 60. Being convinced we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. Adita.
Looking at those words, that list, kind, considerate, patient, generous, modest, self-sacrificing, nobody would have said that about me in my drinking. Zero. Egotistical, mean, selfish, dishonest, manipulative, a cheat, a liar, all those things. Yes, that all fit me before I came in here. And that actually still fits me somewhat today. It's just a little less, you know. Maybe some of those other words are starting to come up here a little bit more and the other ones are going down. But it doesn't tell me I'm going to come in here and become a saint and walk on water and fart rainbows. You know, that's just not going to happen. I am a human. I have varied traits. I'm going to have good and bad qualities and just hope to keep working on growing some of those good ones. And part of it is accepting that aspect of myself and not beat myself up over it. Because when I came in here, I was pretty miserable. I was, you know, suicidal actually when I came in here. And a lot of that had to do with a whole lot of self-hate, and shame and guilt and all sorts of things, relating to things that happened during my drinking and things that didn't happen during my drinking. So, so yeah, that's that. But the idea that running life on self-propulsion and self-will and it all goes bad, that's a huge part of why I drank. Nobody did what I wanted. And that's annoying to me. That's just like, I don't understand. You know, it's like it says, if everybody would just do as I pleased, things would be great, you know, for you and for me, which is absurd, as if I would know what is good for somebody else, or let alone myself. I found, looking back in sobriety, looking back in my drinking days, even when I got what I wanted in life, I was still miserable. By the end of my drinking, I had checked off all the boxes of what makes you a success in life. And I was still walking around drunk every day wanting to kill myself. That's a pretty bad place to be. I was spiritually bankrupt is the phrase I learned in here, even though I had all the other things outside of here. And I can get caught still doing this. To me, it's the chess game I played with life and people. You know, if you say this, I'm going to say this, and then this will happen. And my entire life was played that way. And I had groups of friends, different groups. I was so good. I was playing multiple games of chess with multiple people, you know. And then if I saw that about to fall apart, I would just flip the table and walk away because I got other groups. I got all these other people that I'm manipulating. And that's exhausting. That's exhausting living life.
And I had to act my way into thinking better. So that helped a little bit. So what do we do, you know? And I went ahead and read the rest of it. And I didn't think this actor thing applied to me, of course, you know, and I didn't manipulate people. Well, he broke through that pretty quick. And in my early drinking days, I was more of the first type, the kind, considerate, patient, generous, modest, and self-sacrificing. So I thought, but like Adina said, it was transactional. I wanted you to like me. I want everybody to like me, you know, and that was the price to be paid. And I was in every group, you know, the jocks and the stoners and I did good in school just because God gave me a good brain. So, yeah, I wanted to be part of everything. I don't want to miss out on anything. But, you know, the longer I drank, I didn't realize that that's what I was doing, obviously. But, you know, I didn't like it either when people didn't like me or that saw through that. I remember my first year of college on my hall, one of the guys says, "Don't you think you drink a little too much?" I said, "What a nerd. Yeah. Don't you know we're the cool guys? We're having fun." But you notice I still remember that. That was 45 years ago. And so he hit a nerve somewhere. But the longer I drank, the more I don't know if it just brought it out of me that it was under there or it just changed me. But, you know, I became more mean and egotistical, selfish and dishonest. And especially dishonest, just constantly lying, trying to get out of scrapes or cover things up until really I was all alone. After being a social butterfly kind of guy, I was all alone. You know, I drank alone in a hotel room down at the oceanfront. And it took me about 2 weeks of being in the treatment center and not drinking or anything else to realize I was miserable and lonely. I didn't have the wherewithal to even realize that when I was doing it because I just kept covering it up just by drinking or doing whatever to stop me from thinking about all that stuff, you know? And so, you know, I'm really grateful for the help that I got and the nurturing I got as I worked through these steps, you know, because this was a lot, especially in early sobriety when, yeah, I couldn't think my way out of a paper bag. So, you know, I thought I was smart as you know what, but anyway, thanks.
Thank you both. All right, the third reading is going to be on page 62. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some point in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. And the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. Dita.
Let's see. Selfishness and self-centeredness. That was one of those things. When I came in here, I heard a lot of people talk, actually, also says driven by 100 forms of fear. So selfishness and fear were two words I heard people talk about a lot in here when I first came in, and I couldn't, unfortunately, I also had a bit of an ego problem, and I couldn't really see how that had anything to do with me, right? Because I wasn't afraid of anything. And I was I wasn't selfish, like you said. I was the nice guy that just drank a little too much and had taken some wrong turns in life, you know. And I heard a speaker once talk about, he talked about in jail, everybody, it's nobody's fault, right? They're not there, you know, if it was just that mechanic, if that mechanic had just changed my headlight and the cop wouldn't have pulled me over and found me drunk in my car full of drugs, right? Like, it's all the mechanic's fault, right? Like, I'm just a good guy. But the thing is, after some time, I just started to see how selfish and self-centered I was. I thought my drinking didn't affect anybody but me. And I still, almost a decade later, seeing the repercussions of my drinking and the effects it had on my family, you know, just even my parents and sister, they were the only people that couldn't leave me, actually, because, you know, family. But everybody else had already left. Fear. I was thinking about this last week. I went to a couple concerts, right? We were both down in Charleston for some shows. And I was just thinking, like, you know, as far as fear goes, I'm terrified of large groups of people. And yet I love going to concerts. That puts me in a real troublesome situation. And it took a lot of drugs and alcohol for me to do those things. And today I can walk into those sober. And so I found that I was actually afraid of everything. I was afraid of letting you too close to me. I was afraid of being alone, you know. And actually, I still will find, like, I need you at that perfect distance sometimes. And it's not really, that's not the way life works. For a while during my sobriety, I was seeing a therapist and she said, you know, you like your life in nice, neat little boxes, and that's not life. Like, everything can't be just put away categorically and separated. Life is messy and it all kind of overflows. And that's kind of also the beauty of it. Self-delusion. I remember I was about 5 or 6 months sober, and I was sitting at the Downtown Young and Sober meeting, Downtown Young and Sober on Thursday nights. And I had a flashback to some stuff that had happened 7 years earlier that actually hadn't happened the way I thought it had. And I had cut my parents out, like, of my life for a few years because of that. And I didn't even, but in my head, this self-delusion, I had created a whole life with a deck of cards that was going to fall at any moment, you know, if anybody realized the truth about myself, which was I had no idea what I was doing. And so I created this front for you, and it would attract people. But once you got to know the real me, you left. I think about that self-delusion and self-seeking. There was self-delusion. I heard somebody else talk about, you know, if you go to any bar tonight, somebody's going to have a little too much to drink and they might get a DUI. They might, you know, start an argument with their spouse. They might be late to work tomorrow because they've got a hangover or whatever. But that's just the effect of alcohol on the human body, right? That'll happen to any human that has a little too much alcohol. But an alcoholic will do those things and convince themselves otherwise, that they were justified or in the right, or they will feel guilt or shame, and then they'll drink to bury that. And you do that over and over and over and over again for years. By the end of my drinking, I was living in a fucking fantasy world that was not anywhere close to reality. And it took a long time of coming in here and continuing to work this program to start to even just get a glimpse of what the truth was, or get a glimpse of reality. And I say, last thing, I was I started thinking back. I was about 4 years sober and I was picking up a medallion, and I started to say, like, you know, those first couple of years, I was pretty insane. And I started to think back and I was like, I remember just being a couple months sober and thinking, man, I'm glad I don't drink anymore. I was pretty crazy back then. And I remember at a year thinking like, oh man, I'm glad I got a year. Those first few months of sobriety was fucking wild, right? And then I remember at 4 years thinking, oh man, those first 2 years, I was out of my head. And it didn't occur to me till that moment that I might be insane right now, right? Like, and that in the future, I'm going to look back on this and realize shit, you know, was crazy. And it was true. At 5 years, I remember just feeling like I was just starting to get a taste, like the slightest taste of what a sober life might look like. It was really grounding to realize that I might just be crazy all the time from now till the day I die, and it'll be okay. If I keep doing this, I can hopefully move towards some sense of sanity. I should stop rambling.
No,
this is why notes are a good idea.
No, I'm enjoying it. Dave, alcoholic.
Hey, Dave.
So another section I didn't think applied to me. So again, my sponsor had to go through it with me. You know, selfishness, holding on too tight to what I have, and self-seeking, you know, wanting something else that I haven't worked for, I don't, probably not capable of having. You know, at one point talking about self-delusion, I decided the reason I didn't really have anything is I didn't want anything, because whatever I ended up having, I lost, right? Whether it was a material possession or a girlfriend, whatever, you know, so I just don't want to have anything. That made it all work out just fine, right? Because I didn't have anything. Yeah. No friends or anything. I mean, I have people that love me, my family and some friends that love me, but I'd either pushed them so far away or transferred my denial to them if they were far enough away. It was miserable and lonely. And the self-centered fear that Adita was talking about, I wasn't scared of anything. And then I realized after a little bit, I was just one big puddle of fear, you know, and I was scared of everything. And then the drinking used to take that away. It didn't anymore. And I was, you know, miserable when I was drinking and still scared. And that was a tough place to be. And then it talks about stepping on the toes of our fellows. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, right? I was like, what do you mean seemingly? Yeah, but that's laying the foundation for the fourth step, where I got to look at my part in things, you know, and how did I set the ball rolling and what was I after in that relationship? And darn if I didn't find something in every one of those things, you know. And then I like this moral and philosophical convictions galore for you. Not for me. I was able to give myself a pass, but I expected you to do all these things, you know. God, it was just, yeah. I remember I sat down with my brother, with a mental health worker, and to talk about, what they call it, a confront, really, to just talk about some things. And I was telling him how he hadn't taken good enough care of our father. He said, what have you done? Mm. I haven't done anything, you know. But I thought, because he had stuff, he should be doing more, you know, and just nutty. But, you know, all that helped me. And later on, I was able to make amends for that, and also to pull my own weight, thanks to AA. But yeah, I thought you should do all the right things, but somehow I was able to overlook what I was doing, you know. And of course, that leads to just thinking less and not less of myself in a humble way, but less and less of myself meaning full of shame and regret and remorse and having to drink to stop that, you know. And it's just a vicious circle. That's all.
All right. Thank you both again. All right. Next reading is also on page 62. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Had to quit playing God. It didn't work. I knew what my actions got me. It got me a seat in this room, basically. That's me trying to run my life was not working. So then the idea is presented here. God was going to be the director. He is the principal. We're the agents. He's the father. We are the children. To me, well, one, there's a bit of a Judeo-Christian aspect to that, that, you know, I've kind of come to terms with the idea that it's presenting there is turning my will over and surrendering myself. That's the idea presented here, is I have to surrender who I am to something greater than myself. It's a simple idea, but I found that a little difficult to do. And it's taken me, it's still something I work on. Most times when my life is going shitty, I have to realize, oh wait, I took the wheel back, you know, I'm running the show again. And my first sponsor would often ask me, where's God in all this? You know, I'd sit down with him and I would just blurt out for 20 minutes about all my troubles. He's like, yeah, I hear you and all that, but where's God in all that? And I would be like, oh yeah, God. Yeah. That's what we're supposed to be working with here. Most good ideas are simple. Yeah, it's a simple thing. And I was thinking about this just recently, actually, like I'd already surrendered my life over to alcohol, you know, I'd already done that before. So why not choose this instead? And even if I didn't know what it was, I remember the first time I prayed, I was like two or three weeks into this and I was having a really crappy day. And I closed my door at work and I just said, I don't know what I'm praying to. I don't know what it is, but I'm having a really tough time right now. And I need help. And that was as simple as it gets as a starting point. Something I work on continuously.
Thanks, Adita. You reminded me of, I was kind of in the same boat with prayer. You know, I knew God is great. God is good. Let us thank him for our food. That was always my favorite. And I knew the Lord's prayer, but that was about it. And I didn't understand you could have a personal relationship with a higher power and you could talk to him, you know, or any of that. But I do remember one or two times in the first few months. One time I had a weekend pass and I was taking the Greyhound home, and I had a friend who I used to run with, but had been sober for 7 years picking me up, and I was staying with him for the weekend and they wanted you to go out and test the waters. But I knew I could get off that bus anywhere I wanted to, you know, and I was scared, and I knew I was scared because I was shaking, and I prayed, you know, just for God's will be done on the whole way home. It was just from Williamsburg. But we crested the hill at First Colonial and the sun was coming up, and I just felt this peace and this warmth from the sun. And that really helped me in my journey to believing. And the sun has actually been a big part of my sobriety. That has happened to me a number of times. So if God is my director and I'm his agent, I need to listen to him. But how do I do that? You know, I can really play it up in my head trying to figure all this stuff out. And again, luckily I had a sponsor, and he pointed to the section that deep down inside of us is this fundamental idea of God. And then the section that God enters our hearts and lives in a way that is truly miraculous. And he said, And I guess this is still a small voice, you know, listen to your heart. Your heart will tell you what's right. Your gut will tell you what's wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, and it's a lot easier for me to know when I'm going to do something wrong. But yeah, so if I figure if I don't feel that, then I'm, you know, I'm going to give it a try because my sponsor now tells me U-turns are allowed. But so my sponsor now also tells me, if you have a decision, you're not sure what to do, flip a coin. They heads one thing, tails the other. When it lands, what you feel will tell you what you should do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If it comes up and your gut hurts, then yeah, you shouldn't do that. So, but all this was so new to me. And again, I can really think myself into a tangled mess, I guess I'll say. And but most good ideas are simple. And having a sponsor was able to break that stuff down for me in those ways that were easy to understand and to practice, really to practice, you know, it's action. And it meant the world to me. I still, somehow this guy found out that I always put my left sock on first. It was an old football superstition. And he said, start putting your right sock on first. And almost 20 years later, every morning, I think of him. I put my socks and my shoes on, which makes me think of AA. It's just those little things, you know. Thanks.
Thank you both. Right. Next raise will be on page 63. We were now at step three. Many of us said to our maker as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. Of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life, may I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him.
Addicted alcoholic. I realize I haven't been saying that all along. Just did it the first time. But I was just going to tag on before I say something about that. I don't know if it was from you that I'd heard that about flipping the coin thing, but I've used that in my life. And I will flip a coin. And if it's what I want, it's obvious to me. And if it's not, I get that, and I realize, that I'm not supposed to be doing that. And it's about listening to my body. It was pointed out to me, like, I'm a bit of an anxious individual. If I'm anxious about something, I'd read like, well, what am I feeling? Well, my hands get all sweaty. My inside gets all knotted up. My head starts kind of spinning and all. And it's like, oh, well, what happens when you get really excited about something? Oh, my hands get all sweaty. My insides get all, my head starts spinning. I was like, oh, wait a second. Like, it's the exact same thing. But I've taken it to be a negative thing when it could just as easily snap like that and be a good thing. If I just twist my way of thinking about it around. With the step three prayer, this was this and seven I had on a little note card, and now they actually just have them. I have one in my wallet with both typed up, and I would get on my knees and read both, and that was how I started to learn to pray. That and serenity prayer obviously were the beginnings of my prayer life. That's not true. I will take a pause here and rewind about 35 years to being a arrogant teenager. And I grew up Hindu, which I feel like is not like, I don't think anybody in here grew up Hindu. So I will explain. We didn't have a temple to go to when I was growing up in DC, in the DC area. And now there's a handful around. But so we would do prayers on Sunday. And my parents are religious people, and we would do these prayers in Sanskrit, which is like doing prayers in Latin. Why would you do them if you don't actually understand it? But it's what we did. And then I remember being, 12, 13, 14 years old. And I started questioning my mom, like, why do we do this? Like, I don't even get it. And she's like, because sometimes you just do it, because you're supposed to. I'm like, well, that's not good enough. And a week or two later, I'm like, no, seriously, I don't want to do this because the Redskins game's on. And I want to, go watch TV or whatever. And it was like, no, we're going to do this because there's a ritual aspect to it. And that's why we do it. And I remember a couple of weeks later, I'm like, nope, not good enough. And she sat me down and she goes, look, I don't care what you want to believe in your life. I don't care if you want to be Hindu, Muslim, Christian, Jewish, Buddhist, whatever. I'm just trying to instill in you the idea that something created all of this and to honor and respect that and have something to realize that there's something bigger. And I thought, oh, that's all bullshit too. And I'm just going to do what I'm going to do. And 18, I leave the house and I never look back until I'm 35 and broken and beaten down from alcohol to come into these rooms and have you all tell me the exact same thing. And that sucks because I wasted 17 years of my life, So the other, the main thing I have from this is, the take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. To take away my difficulties so I can feel better about myself. That's not what it's saying. Like, so I can go about, my life and have a good time. It's saying so that others may bear witness to that power. And I feel like every time I'm in an AA meeting, that's all I'm doing. And that's all you all are doing. I'm not doing anything different than you all are doing by just sitting here and showing me what a sober life looks like with a higher power in your life. And nobody in AA has ever told me what to do. It's only by watching you all walk through this program, stay sober through difficulties, that I've learned or gained anything. I remember the last time I sat in this meeting, I've done this a couple times, but one time I came and I had gotten the readings and the email that we were going to talk about, and the other person on the email I thought was some new guy. Right. I was like, oh, this guy's only got like a few months. All right. That's cool. I'll carry it. It'll be fine. And I show up and it's not who I thought it was. And instead, it's a guy who's got like 44 years of sobriety. And I'm like, that's a humbling experience when you sit down with somebody that's sober longer than you've been alive, And I was like, maybe I'll just shut up and listen, But one of the things that he said that totally stuck with me ever since is, sometimes you'll hear people say, my worst day sober has been better than my best days drunk. And he goes, honestly, that's bullshit. He goes, because in my drinking days, I met my wife, I had two children, I had a wonderful career that I had built. And he goes, and since I've been sober, I've sat by my wife's bedside for 2 years as she died of cancer. I buried one of my children. I've seen one of my grandchildren go through, some stuff. And he was like, in those days have been horrible. And the thing that I took from that was, but I still keep doing this. I keep showing up, and I think that more than anything is just people just showing me that you can live a sober life regardless with a higher power in your life. Everybody in here, whether you got a day or 40 years, is telling me that they're sober because they have this relationship with a higher power. Either you're all bullshitting me or there's something to it. And so I just choose to believe that there's something to it.
Thanks, Ada. I just wanted to say real quick that when Morgan and Adita talked about the show, about 5-6 years ago, I was in New Orleans for Jazz Fest, And I said, I'm about to go to a meeting before I go over there with all those drinkers. And I go in at 7 a.m. I was at a coffee house upstairs and Adita is sitting there.
I was going to share that.
I got it first.
So. All right.
Anyway. All right. So all this stuff I've talked about and what my sponsor taught me, all that intellectual stuff, happened before I came back to Virginia Beach. And I came back and I told you that he told me not to call him anymore until I got a sponsor. And I got a sponsor here that got the guy that shook the book at you. And because he was at all the meetings I went to and he knew the book, you know. And he said, what's W on us? I'm all four. I said, all right, when are you going to do it? And I just kept putting it off, and putting it off, thinking I was neatly evading it. And for 3 months. So I was living in an Oxford house. Good things are starting to happen through no, shall I say, fault of my own or not on my account. But, you know, I was staying sober. I was going to meetings. I was, for the most part, doing what I was supposed to, except for my fourth step. And, you know, things were going well. But all of a sudden, all those things I had done in my past start swimming around in my head again. And, you know, it kept happening and I went to more meetings and I called my sponsor and it was still there. And I could taste a drink one day. I really could. I went to two meetings. I called my sponsor. He didn't pick up. I left a message. I was thinking today, I never even thought of calling the other guy that had been my sponsor, but he probably wouldn't have been at home either. Cause I believe now that, you know, my higher power was in charge of all this, but I left an 8 o'clock meeting. It was 9 o'clock. I came to a T intersection and my favorite bar was a mile one way and the Oxford house was a mile the other way. And I said, God, please get me home tonight. And I got home. And if I told that story to a non-AA member, big deal, you just drove home, you know? But I knew that I didn't drive home, that I got there with help. I abandoned myself to God at that stoplight. I had nowhere else to go and nowhere else to turn. And I said, God, please get me home. And I did. And, that was the last serious compulsion I had to drink. The thought still crosses my mind occasionally, but it's a thought and I know what to do with it, you know, but that's, you know, a lot of people, I remember that, you know, that was the last time I had a serious compulsion to drink. And so, you know, it says after this reading that the wording is, of course, quite optional. And for me, it was God give me home tonight. And since that day, I've changed, you know, made a decision to turn our will and our lives under the care of God. I used to say AA, but now it's God. Now, to me, I hope this doesn't offend anybody, but God is kind of a term of convenience, you know, because it's personal to everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, it's higher power is just too many syllables for me. I say, God, and you know, it is definitely a much greater thing. But when we're all together, you know, we are so much greater than the sum of our parts. And where does all that extra come from? You know? Thanks.
Thanks. Thank you both. All right. So we'll have 1 minute on this one sentence each. How about that?
That's all I got.
Next. We launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning.
I'm going to go ahead and say I was about 3 years sober and I went back to Jazz Fest and I've been going there for years and I was terrified to go back. So the first 2 years I didn't go in sobriety. And that third year when I went back, and it was a 7 a.m. meeting, I hadn't slept all night. I'd been to shows all night just dancing my ass off. But I was like, before I start this day or end last day, I should probably get to a meeting. And I ran into this meeting and to see a familiar face was just, that was like God right there. My sobriety is littered with God moments. And that was one of those. Next, we launch on a course of vigorous action. The first step of which is personal housekeeping. Cleaning. Everybody's going to go on the next and vigorous action. And we immediately do this, right? thing that stood out to me just now was this is the first step. There's a whole lot of vigorous action that's yet to come. And it's now I actually got to go do some work. All the mental gymnastics is done. And now I actually got to go do stuff, starting with put pen to paper. That's that.
Thanks, Dave. So when I woke up the next morning, I knew what I had to do. I just went to the library and started writing. And I did that for 3 days. And I needed a place where that was my only intention. And I try to, when my guys I'm helping are having trouble with the four stuff, I say, make an appointment with yourself, go somewhere with the only purpose being to do this work. And that's what I did. In 3 days, it was done, you know, and I met with my sponsor and did the fifth step. It's shaking like a leaf, but I did it, you know. And you know, it's always, God, I wish I'd done that sooner, you know, but I did it. Thanks. Yeah.
Thank you both. All right. We'll thank everybody in a minute. We are going to pass the seventh tradition baskets that, we already passed the seventh tradition baskets. And in Zoom land, there's going to be a PayPal and Venmo link, and you can also sign up for email at simpleactions.net. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. There is literature available to my left. It says hand sanitizing station, but it is actually literature, as you can see over there. So we got some big books, some pamphlets, and all that good stuff. See a home group member if you need help with any of that. Sponsorship questions. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. And if you're shy, feel free to send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. And the meeting after the meeting, all are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting. Will it be held at Plaza del Sol tonight? Are there some takers in here? Awesome. Cool. Sounds great. That is going to be on 22nd and Colonial. If you hit the train tracks, you've gone too far. It's literally a straight shot or down the road. In closing, let's thank the panel. Thank you both. And feel free after the Lord's Prayer to come up here and welcome or thank our panel. And I have just now volunteered Grant to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
Vision for You, Big Book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, Grant. And I think we're still just staying seated, and we'll do a quick little moment of silence followed by the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, power, and glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Woo. Thank you all for an awesome meeting. Thank you both so much.